Should remain alone to avoid conflict or disturbance. In other words, persons engaged in ordinary yoga processes should not even associate with each other. This verse indirectly refers to the serpent who, fearing attack from human beings, keeps himself secluded. From this example, we learn that a saintly person should not associate with ordinary materialistic people. He should also avoid having a fixed residence and should wander unnoticed by others. Our engagement in material existence is a cause of our unhappiness. Such engagement destroys the real purpose of our life, Krishna consciousness. Somehow or other, one must give up the deep-rooted attachment to material society, friendship and love. One must practice detachment and by surrender to the principles of Krishna consciousness, one's auspicious life will begin. By organizing one's life according to the Varnashram system, one can take up the first step in self-realization. In other words, one should accept an honest occupation and regulate his sex life either by giving it up entirely as a brahmachari or sannyas or by living as a married householder. Without regulating one's occupation and personal life, there will be chaos and it will be very difficult to make spiritual advancement. The attachments to material society, friendship and love are based on a long previous experience in the material world. They are great obstacles in the path of transcendental understanding, and if one maintains them, spiritual progress will be most difficult. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught by his example and precept what a devotee should and should not do, and obedience to such principles brings one to the path of supreme perfection. Thus one has to rise above ordinary social custom which directs the living entity toward useless sense gratification. Translation again. A saintly person should remain alone, constantly travel without any fixed residence. Being alert, he should remain secluded and should act in such a way that he is not recognized or noticed by others. Living without companions, he should not seek more than required. So we have to implement these practices from now on, starting from today. We shall all remain alone, not associating with one another. We should all leave our homes and live on the streets, being very alert that we should remain secluded, that people will not even notice us, perhaps we can take up some residence in some dark alley or behind a tree, under a stump somewhere, and moving around without any companions, we shall not speak more than required. So these are the instructions of Krishna, so we shall have to execute them. Of course, here, Lord Krishna, giving instruction by telling the story of the Avadhuta Brahmana, and we discussed previously that these sort of activities, which are recommended by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, if one is practicing the Ashtanga Yoga process, they should be taken up for one on that path. But throughout the Bhagavad Gita, of course, Krishna recommends that, you know, even if it were possible for someone in another age, certainly not in this age, not possible to practice the Sangha Yoga in this age. But perhaps going back to Arjuna's age, going back 5,000 years, even then, Arjuna thought it was difficult, even in those times, but still, there were more yogis then. But actually this type of yoga was even, you know, thousands and thousands of years before Arjuna's time. Even if one could practice this as a yogi, still Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that it's much easier just to fix the mind on Krishna. Very easy, and besides that, as we described last Sunday, one doesn't have to, in these yoga processes, one is depending upon one's own particular skills and intelligence to make advancement, whereas the bhakti yogi is actually being carried along by Krishna's mercy and his strength, and Krishna is guiding him with his intelligence. So that makes it very easy, and there's none of the impediments. But in this age of Kali, of course, in the purport to that verse in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, verses number 10, 11 and 12, you see that in the purport there, Srila Prabhupada states that actually it's just not possible to follow this in Kali Yuga, and actually one should take up the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So at the end of this purport here, it describes how Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives us the principles by which we can make advancement in spiritual life. So if you go through the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, all the Vedic literatures, you will find that there are many, many thousands of rules and regulations. Some which cancel out others. In other words, if you are doing this, then you should do it this way. If you're on a higher level, you don't have to follow that rules and regulations, instead follow this one. If you're on a different level, you don't follow this rules and regulations, you follow this. So in this way, there are many, many rules and regulations, but according to what's practical and what's suitable, some we follow and some we don't. Shifting through all of those will take many, many lifetimes, but we are very fortunate. That is why the Bhagavad Gita, of course, is so important, because Krishna has done that. Bhagavad Gita, of course, is the Gita Upanishad, which means that he's shifted through all the Vedic literatures and he's just given the essence. He's given the essence of Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Astanga Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga, all there in Bhagavad Gita. Then, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself, he further refined those instructions of the Bhagavad Gita for people in Kali Yuga, and further refine them so that they can actually attain the, go directly to the topmost rules and regulations which grant the highest supreme benefit. Just like, for instance, if one is working in a kitchen, one may be working in the kitchen, anyone who's ever worked under korma, anyone ever worked under korma?
Yeah.
Very strict, yeah. You have to do exactly what you're told. God help you if you don't. You find yourself backed over the bench. Korma will be telling you very, very savagely what you should have done. But, you measure things out, everything has to be measured out. Vegetables have to be cut in a certain way. You used to cut the, those little green vegetables.
And it's okay.
No.
Broccoli.
No. No. Little green, look like the top of the tree. What? No.
Brussels
sprouts. So we used to have to cut them, because if you cut them for some of the fish. That's corner. Sorry, Tom. We used to have to cut them, a little cross on the end. So you had to cut them, peel a couple of the outer leaves off, and then cut a little cross on the end. Because that took that little bit of bitterness out of the Brussels sprout. Sorry, Tom. You're going to keep trying. I can't. Someone might. So, but, and spicing, everything has to be measured out, and everything is that. But, as one becomes more and more proficient in the kitchen, some of the different rules and regulations may not be followed. So, for instance, if you actually go into a kitchen now, you'll see some of the cooks who, cook the Rajbhog or some of the offerings every day. You probably very rarely see them with a measuring spoon. Usually they'll just be standing there with a packet, or they'll just, dip their hand in and like this. But usually they're pretty good there, they'll measure it just, spot on. They're pretty good because they have, by practice, they have it. So some of the rules and regulations that you have to measure everything exactly can be done away with because someone is on a different level, they're more expert, and they can literally just pour it from the packet, which saves a lot of time. Therefore you'll see that someone may go into the kitchen and take a few hours and struggle to cook a few breads, and some of these expert cooks that we have, they'll just sort of whip in there, but you think, gee, where are they, They just sort of whip in and whip up all these preparations, everyone beautiful, and done very quick. So, by practice and by Krishna's grace, some of the rules and regulations are not necessary. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has sort of, skimmed off anything that's unnecessary, because in Kali Yuga, what is one of the things we don't have? Time. We don't have much time. What else do we have? We have a very disturbed mind. What else? We're a little bit lazy. So, if you take all these qualities together, Lord Chaitanya knows if they're going to follow anything, it's going to be the minimum. So, if they're going to follow the minimum, make sure those minimum are the most potent. There's no use following the minimum those rules are not very powerful, if those activities are not very powerful. But if you follow the minimum, but those minimum activities are super, super powerful, then you get a really good result. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's very, very clever. And so he has given us the minimum. And by following that, he spoke that, of course, to Rupa Goswami. He summarized that in Nectar Devotion. There are nine different processes of devotional service, of bhakti, which can be expanded into 64 different items. Of those, five are considered very, very powerful. And they're so powerful, it describes it, if you can perform even one of those without offence, then it can very quickly elevate one to the platform of love of God. Very quickly one can develop the symptoms of bhava. One of those, of course, is to worship the deity of the Lord. So, in this purport, we see here these yogis, they have to be so careful because the rules and regulations that they're following are not as powerful. The process that they're following is not as captivating to the mind, not as powerful to withdraw the mind from the material energy. They have to be so careful. Even though they're a yogi, because their process is not so powerful, at any moment their mind can again be very quickly dragged into enjoying, as it puts in the purport, friendship, society and love in the material world. So they have to avoid all of association. They have to not be with anyone. Literally just hide away. Not get involved in conversations. If they begin to speak to someone will start talking about something, and some material thing. What do people talk about in this world? They talk about friendship, society, love. As soon as a yogi begins to talk to someone, they're going to remind him about something, and his mind's going to be attracted. Oh, that's interesting. Is that a fact? Is that what happened? Gee, I never knew that. And then he'll become interested, and once again he'll become attached, that yes, I want to get a taste of that friendship, society, love. So he can't talk about it. Because he can't talk about it, he can't associate with anyone. They have to be so aloof that practically they have to, if they have to travel, they have to travel in such a way that people won't notice them. So they won't stop and ask them or speak to them about anything. They can't have a fixed residence. Then people will know, there's a yogi who lives up the street there. Let's go and knock on his door. Oh, he's moved. He's not there. So the yogis, you just cannot get near them. So, and in that way, they basically avoid bad association material existence, and they remain safe. But a yogi doesn't have to do any of that because the process, the rules and regulations and the path that they're following is so powerful. So, for instance, Rupa Goswami, in those five different potent forms of devotion, one he describes as worshipping the deities. Now, before you look, don't look at the deities. Don't look. I have to give you a warning. Before you look. If you happen to look that way, you may lose your interest in society, friendship, and love. So, just before you're looking. Just be very careful. You look that way, you see the beautiful form of Krishna. This is since Krishna graduated, dressed this morning. He looks extra attractive. He looks like he's going to have a lot of fun today. So, careful not to look at those eyes. So you're looking, you're done. You're finished. I tried to warn you. That's it. So that's it for friendship, society, and love. Every time, you know, something comes up, someone's going to try and attract you into the material world, and you're just going to have Krishna's beautiful form fixed in your head. So, you know, there's no hope. All of you, you're finished. Yeah. So, this is what Rupa Goswami said. If you're at all attracted to friendship, society, love, don't look at Krishna. Don't look at those beautiful eyes, especially when the moonlight is there. And don't think about Vrindavan, Mathura, with all the beautiful Vrindavan. Krishna standing there, Father Jamuna, pining his fruits, and all the flowers, and all the beautiful peacocks, and so many hundreds of varieties of trees all bearing fruit, and all the buzzing bees buzzing around those trees. Don't think about that. Because you may lose your attraction for Bourke Street. shopping malls and St Kilda Road and Fitzroy Street. So be careful, keep that out of your mind. I'm just giving you a fair warning. Whatever you do, don't associate with the devotees. Because, you know, you'll end up thinking that you're wasting your time. Just, you know, if you associate with the devotees, you think, everything I'm doing is just a waste of time. Why am I wasting my whole life like this? Srimad Bhagavatam, because it's my duty to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna Goswami is opening the door, you can all come out if you like. Because if you hear the Bhagavatam, of course, then you're going to not be interested in economic development and sense gratification and the cheating morality of the world, even liberation, which is highly sought after. You're going to lose your interest, though. There'll be no more interesting than a piece of straw on the ground. And, of course, most importantly, to not chant Hare Krishna. Especially in association with others.
I can hear that.
Yeah. I give you a fair warning. That will really finish you, and then that's the end of your material existence. So, if you value friendship, society, and love, please don't take up these five processes. And then everything will be okay. But honestly, I'm just going to leave it there before I contaminate everyone. Any questions or comments from any of that?
How to observe your meditation in Krishna's lotus feet some practical way besides chanting deity worship?
Well, one of course is to have the picture, the form of the lotus feet in your mind. Actually, to meditate upon the lotus feet of Krishna, one has to become expert in hearing, because first one must hear about Krishna's lotus feet, what they look like, what are the effects of meditating on Krishna's lotus feet, where Krishna walks with those lotus feet. Who are the different varieties of devotees who relish the nectar from Krishna's lotus feet? So one must hear about that, and one must clear away all the other rubbish that's in one's head, by chanting. So if one chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and hears and chants the various name, quality, form, etc. of Krishna, then that will clear away all the rubbish in one's head, because we cannot think of Krishna as lotus feet as long as there's so much other things in our head. We'll try, you know, we'll think of Krishna's lotus feet for about 2 seconds and all these other things will come back. But if we chant Hare Krishna very nicely, our minds will be crystal clear, and that gives us that opportunity. The mind is peaceful, controlled, and becomes naturally attractive. And then by the process of meditation, remembering, of course, remembrance at first, we practice. That practice is done by in the association of devotees. Actually, to remember that smarana is for very advanced devotees. Generally, young devotees can't remember very well. Generally, as soon as, you know, younger devotees, when they stop chanting in the association of devotees, they stop remembering, just like that. Whereas advanced devotees, they're constantly remembering. The process of remembrance is that first a devotee becomes very, very fixed up in one's service. That is the first process of allowing yourself to be able to remember. The devotee, that they're very, very strict, and they become fully engaged 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, fully engaged in serving Krishna, and they become just fixed up. So really, they've got no room for Maya. That's the first thing. When they're on that platform, engaged fully in devotional service, then they can voluntarily try to remember the lotus feet of the Lord and his qualities, his form, his pastimes, like that. And the devotee will find that by practicing that with that purified mind through such fixed up devotional service, that he'll be able to do that. At certain stages, Maya will creep back in, and he won't notice where that, or he or she won't notice where Maya gets back in, and then that remembrance stops. But by practice, one will continually try to remember Krishna, his form, his qualities, his pastimes. And the time span between remembering and being in Maya is at first, you know, a long span, but that span becomes shorter and shorter by practice. And one becomes more expert in noticing the point where Maya enters one's mind. At first one doesn't notice. That is Ruchi. On a platform of Ruchi, a devotee actually tries to remember Krishna, they're very attached to Krishna, they have a taste of Krishna consciousness, but sometimes Maya gets in and they stop remembering. But they don't see when Maya gets in. But a devotee on the platform of the Shakti, they notice. That's the difference. And as soon as Maya tries to get in, as we sang that song this morning by Sri Bhaktivinoda before, how long will you sleep in the witch, how long will you sleep in the lap of the witch called Maya? So generally, we fall asleep in the lap of the witch called Maya, and we don't notice, and then we get woken up by, we hear some kirtan devotees saying, hey, but good, what's happening? So I suppose in there. So, but gradually, an advanced devotee, he sees Maya as soon as she tries in. Maya is very tricky, of course. There's a very nice pastime with Srila Guru Kishore Das Babaji, who explains how she works. At one time he was at a dance show, and at this particular place some people would leave out some rice and things, and then he would take them into his room. Well, they would leave some beauty prasadam, I think it was. He would take it into his room and he would then eat. I think there was also things that they would leave for him which he would cook. So, you know, but that was, he was honouring prasadam, cooking things for Krishna. He was serving Krishna. You know, he was actually reciprocating with Krishna. He considered that his service. So, one time when he came out, there was this lady there, and because he was nearly blind, and he couldn't see, he had a walking stick. And a snake was actually crawling down the rope to the basket where the foods were hanging. And as he went up to grab it, a woman yelled out, "Oh, you know, those in our eyes, you know, stop, there's a snake." And he sort of, you know, stood back a little bit, and, you know, she went to hit the snake, and the snake fell on the ground, and then slid it off. So then, you know, when the snake had apparently gone, he went to get that food, and the lady was saying, "Well, now you go into your room, and I will cook something for you and bring it in." And you know, he was explaining that you know, he cooked for himself and what have you, and he just wanted to just do what he came out to do. But she insisted, no, you go into your room now, and you know, I will bring you some you know, foods. And then he got really, really angry, and he yelled at her, you know, that if you don't leave right now, I'll get really angry. Of course, people knew, because Srila Guru Kishore Das Babaji, he could get very, very angry when he got bitten. Although he was very old and practically blind, when he got very, very angry, he scared the hell out of people. So anyway, she left. So then he was standing there and he said, Did you just see what happened? There was someone else there. And the person's going, "What is that now? What happened?" And he said, "Do you see that Maya, in the guise of that woman, pretending to help me, she would not let me do my service?" So he was just, you know, sometimes you find that people may even, in the name of helping a devotee, are actually disturbing the service. And sometimes devotees may not recognize that. Sometimes one's service to Krishna, even just reading, even say reading Srimad Bhagavatam, becomes disturbed. You sit down to read, and someone will come up, you know, "Oh, Prabhu, I want to massage you." And, or, you know, this or that or that. They may actually even appear to be, you know, wanting to serve, but in some cases, if you have a particular service to do, Maya will enter in somewhere or another to stop you from doing it. Because to do any service for Krishna is actually the result of pious activities. Perform over many, many, many lifetimes. So you see that, for instance, some devotees can sit down and they can read Srimad Bhagavatam and they can just read until, you know, for hours and hours. Others, they'll sit down, they get through about two sentences, and they start yawning. It's a long sentence, that one. Cut extra commas in that. What's the time? Because, you know, or the back of the gear or anything, because there's no stock of piety. It's not a material activity. Unless one is that. Just like Krishna says in the Sivadeva Goswami says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that the cowherd boys who are playing with Krishna in Vrindavan, because they're always singing his lotus feet, they're always touching his lotus feet, they're always running, let me be the first to touch Krishna, they're playing with him, they're eating lunch with him. They, some of those, of course, are Nitya Siddhis, but others, they've earned that by many, many, many lifetimes of pious activities. So, again, by hearing and chanting, we develop the piety by which we can remember. And without that piety, backed by hearing and chanting, we cannot do it. And without that piety, we may sometimes even attempt to do some service, and Maya will certainly test us. And according to our expertise, which is a measure of our previous devotional piety, we will either see the truth of Maya or not see them. So you see, with someone like Srila Guru Kishore Das Balaji, you know, very expert, as soon as Maya tries to enter in any disguise, immediately spots the difference. You know, spot the difference. But for those who don't have such expertise in devotional service, because they don't have such, they haven't generated piety by devotee accruing, heaps and heaps of piety through devotional activities, they can't just imitate that activity. So to remember the lotus feet of Krishna, one practices, first one becomes fixed up as a devotee, and then one begins to actually practice to meditate upon the form of Krishna. And material energy will come in and disrupt that as often as she can. But as if one is becomes more and more expert, because they're chanting nicely, they're serving devotees, they're accruing so much results, benefits from their devotional activities, then they become very strong at the ability to recognize when Maya enters and to remove Maya from the mind and the senses and to continue to remember. So as one practices that remembrance becomes very deep, very concentrated, very powerful, practically continuous. And the last stage, which is called Sarashiki, is where, that is the Bhava platform, automatically, without one endeavouring, Krishna's pastimes begin to manifest within one's mind and heart as one is performing one's service. And very, very powerful, just takes over one's entire being. So these are the different levels in how to meditate upon the lotus feet of Krishna.
So what is the exact, what is the similarity between bhava bhakti and prema bhakti? What is the difference between bhava bhakti and prema bhakti?
On the platform of bhava bhakti, is there are still some slight traces from Aparad, whereas the Prema Bhakti is there is no trace of any anathas of any form. The Bhava Bhakti Bhakta, he or she has direct association with Krishna, which is sort of known as spuriti. It is momentary, it is for short periods of time. They can sense the presence of Krishna, they feel the direct presence of Krishna. They may sometimes literally smell the aroma from his lotus feet. And with that beautiful aroma from Krishna's lotus feet, so they're meditating upon Krishna's lotus feet on the platform of Bhava Bhakti, and they literally, Krishna allows them to smell his lotus feet, and that overwhelms their senses, and changing it gives them ecstatic symptoms. the Premabhati, they're also having a direct association with Krishna that is more continuous, and they literally participate in Krishna's lila. So the Bhava Bhakti is directly experiencing the presence of Krishna, and the Prema Bhakti is directly participating in Krishna's lilas. But they are both on the platform of the love of God. Bhava really is the dawn of love of God. You know, it is the budding of the flowers. So just as when the sun rises, you know, the sunshine is there. Even though we can't quite see the sun, still the sunshine is there. Everything is lit up. So it is like the Bhava Bhakti. And for the Prema Bhakti, the sun has fully risen. But they're certainly not in the darkness of night as others. And therefore, because the Bhava Bhakti, literally a particle of the rays of the mercy of, you know, Srimati Radharani enters their heart. Hridin Shakti enters the heart of the Bhava Bhakti, the Sudha Shastra. They actually situated on the platform of Sudha Shastra. There is no trace of any even material goodness, passion or ignorance. Sudha Shastra is literally the spiritual energy, Krishna's internal spiritual potency enlivening their heart. But, you know, whereas there's just, you know, when the sun rises, there's a, you know, a few rays of sunshine that first come through. It's not as strong as like the Bhava Bhakti. But of course, when the sun rises fully, then that sunshine is very, very powerful. So that spiritual energy, the influence of the spiritual energy upon the heart of the Prema Bhakti is very, very powerful.
Any examples are there of how Prema Bhakti has very powerful? Any examples which we have on this? Which specifically point of the Bhava? Incidents in the lives of people who were in Bhava?
Well,
but not on Prema.
What's that? devotees who have had that initial contact with the Lord, that generally elevates into that platform of Bhava Bhakti, they have some direct vision or experience of the Lord, that is generally devotees on the Bhava Bhakti platform. And from there, because of that, you know, small direct contact, it then very quickly develops into Krishna Prema. So then those Bhava Bhaktis then are also known as Prema Bhaktis. You know. So we might sometimes think of Narada Muni in the initial stages as being a Bhava Bhakta, but then because of more constant association, then we think of him as a Prema Bhakta. Any other questions? So, please take my warning seriously. Look what's happened is we've all forgotten. We've got a world of friendship, love and society out there waiting for us. Here we are wasting our time in every time class. I have to apologise once again. Hare Krishna.